Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karmatiksem Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's talk, given by Lama Kathy Wesley, is entitled Prayers for a Pandemic, Part 1. The COVID-19 coronavirus pandemic took much of the world by surprise in late 2019 and early 2020. When the state of Ohio went under stay-at-home orders in mid-March, the Columbus KTC's meeting place at the Tifereth Israel Synagogue was closed, and KTC had to move to a digital presentation format online. This is the first Dharma Talk given by Lama Kathy under the new reality of COVID-19 and addresses the fears and concerns of Sangha members struggling with the illness and its societal impact. Lama Kathy teaches methods of calming meditation learned from a Tibetan doctor and talks about how meditation and Buddhist practice can help in the face of fear and hardship. The audio was drawn from her video webcast from home. Enjoy the podcast.
Welcome to our Dharma Talk for today. I am both on YouTube and on Facebook Live. I want to say hi to everybody because it's wonderful to be here and to be with you. So I'm going to start by saying a prayer in Tibetan. And that prayer is the four-line refuge prayer. I'm going to be saying it in Tibetan. If it's a prayer with which you're familiar, you can join in. And if it's a prayer with which you're unfamiliar, you can join in your heart and in your mind, thinking that we're spending this time together today for the benefit of all sentient beings. O sanje chu dan zu chi chu nam la jang chu ba du da ni chap su chi da ji jin so ji pe so nam ji dro la pen chi sanje tru par sho. The Four Immeasurables Prayer. Semchen tamje te wa tan de we gyu tan tem par gyu chi to ga tan lu nya gi gyu tan dra wa chu chi to nya me pe de wa dam pa tam hin dra wa chu chi ne rin chan dan dra we tan yen chen po la ne par chu chi. And finally, one personal prayer. O palden sawe lama rinpoche Dagi chi or pe de ten chula, Kardin jembo bane che sun te. Ku sun togi ngu trup sal du so. Okay, thank you. Once again, thank you very much for being with us today. And I did this sort of al fresco at the last minute. We will be having meetings at the Columbus KTC by telephone this week to try to set up more permanent ways of communicating with each other during this time of hiatus and during this time of illness and difficulty in the community. And so, but until we get it all figured out, I figured that it would be good to at least not break the continuity of our Columbus KTC meetings. We were interrupted with our KTC meetings a few years ago when we had a fire that destroyed our building in 2016 in January. But now I figured yes, because there are worries about an epidemic in the community. And there are worries of all kinds that we might not be able to be together, but we can at least try these fantastic means of being with one another via technology. So that's a little bit about what the current situation is and what the plan is for the coming week. So I wanted to keep the continuity going of Dharma Talks, and I'll be here this week for about an hour. And also we'll be here next week perhaps in a different format, in a different way. But at least this is something to begin with. So I think the most important thing is I hope you are all well. And I hope you are all working with all of the things that are happening. I'm sorry that we're going through all of this together, but we are going through it together, which is at least some comfort and benefit. So what I wanted to talk about today was the general framework of what I wanted to talk about today was the Buddhist approach to what is happening, and a little bit about the things that we can do now to take care of our minds as well as our bodies during this situation. A few years ago, at KTD Monastery, our home monastery in Woodstock, New York, we did a program called Compassion at the Time of Death. And during that time, Lama Justin von Boydash and Jan Tarlin and I worked with a group of maybe 15 people about the worries that we have about illness, aging, and death, and about how to approach our own illness, aging, and death. And I think that one of the main themes that emerged from this particular situation and this particular teaching was that our minds are what we carry with us everywhere. Our body may end up being left behind, but our mind is what we carry. We carry it into our future life. We carry it into the next moment. And so our mind is what we have to take care of. Yes, we have to do all of those things that are good for us. We have to do the things that our public health officials tell us are good for us. We have to wash our hands for 20 seconds. I like the Vajrasattva mantra, but you can choose your favorite thing to recite while you're washing your hands. We have to keep the social distance, which is why we're communicating this way right now. We have to, those of us who have health problems, we have to isolate. And so this is why you won't be seeing as much of me in the next few weeks. So we have to do all of those things with our bodies to keep our body healthy, as well as getting enough sleep and eating well and all of those things that are pragmatic. But in the end, it's only our mind that experiences everything. Our bodies convey information, but it's our mind that actually experiences it. So what we need to do now is work with our minds and work with the feelings that we have, work with our fears, work with our concerns, and find ways to work with the thoughts that come up while all this is going on. Now, there are at least three groups of people out there watching. There are folks who, like me, are at high risk and who have to stay home, like all the time. There's the second group of people who have to work and be among people and interact with people, and they have to take care of their families and their homes and their kids and their pets. And then there's the third group, which is the in-betweens, the folks who are neither isolated or out among them, but are actually working in both atmospheres. And so everybody has a different feeling based on where they are in that grouping. So for me, I'm kind of isolated right now. My husband and I are kind of isolated right now, but I feel as though I'm connected with everyone because of all of the social media and other channels that we have. But yes, I have worries and concerns, and I think everybody else has worries and concerns. And so the Buddhist methodology for working with worry and concern is to recognize that this worry and concern is coming from within our own minds. It's actually happening within us. And that's something we can actually work with. If you remember those first words from the Dhammapada, the teachings of the Buddha, the sayings of the Buddha, we are what we think, all that we are arises with our thoughts, and with our thoughts we make the world. If we remember this, then it will make sense to us to actually begin to work with those thoughts that we're having at this moment. And so if we can practice some kind of, I guess we'll call it a spiritual exercise that will quiet the chatter even if it's only for a little while, we'll get some perspective on the things that we're thinking. So, for example, in the Buddhist tradition, we practice quiet sitting meditation, which is sometimes called shamatha, which is the Sanskrit name, or shine, which is the Tibetan name, and it means calm abiding. And by abiding in calmness or abiding peacefully, we can actually begin to work with our thoughts. If you remember the technique of calm abiding, it stands to reason. When you're doing calm abiding meditation, you sit quietly and sit in the posture of meditation, whatever posture is comfortable for you. And you take one thought and think, I'm going to be meditating for the benefit of others. We call this the excellent attitude at the beginning. You take one deep breath and then breathe out. And then allow your attention to rest on the breath as it comes in and goes out. And by doing this, we begin to work with the continuous flow of thoughts. For example, as you're watching the breath come in and watching the breath go out, you're watching with your mind's eye. You're watching with your mind's eye. You can follow it with your attention for a short time, and what you'll get is a short period of attention. And that short period of attention will be followed by a little mental wandering. You might wander into the past, wander into the future, or start analyzing the now, how you're feeling in this instant. And the key method of calm abiding meditation is to notice that wandering, that we've wandered from the object of the breath. And then we can even gently touch the thought with our attention. We can label a thought thinking. We can let it go. And then we can return our attention to the breath for a fresh start. And when we do that, when we return our attention to the breath for a fresh start, we're actually cutting the continuity of whatever the previous thought was. Now, you might think cutting the continuity of a thought is not a good thing because we use our thoughts for so much. But in this context, the context of calm abiding, the context of meditation, we let go of our thoughts in that instant for the purpose of letting go, for the purpose of relaxing, for the purpose of not focusing over much and not grasping too hard that thought. So what we get when we return our attention to the first, we get when we do that is that we get a moment of ease, a moment where we decided what we were going to place our attention on. And this is where our benefit for ourselves begins. So as we're sitting and practicing this calm abiding, one breath in, the breath out, noticing a distraction, labeling it, letting it go, and then returning our attention to the breath for a fresh start. What we do is as one Buddhist teacher said, our thoughts, which have a tendency to roll and go here and there, begin to get a little bit of a flat bottom on them, and they tend to not flow as quickly and as strongly. And so what we can do first for ourselves and for our minds is to practice this calm abiding. Now, you notice I call it practice. That's because our teachers have told us that there's no perfect tranquility when we first start, that it's a little bit up and down and back and forth. And that's why it's a practice, because we have to work at it day by day, moment by moment. Start with short periods of time. Only try to sit for 5 minutes or 10 minutes at first. And by doing this kind of sitting for short periods, you'll find that you have 1 second, 2 seconds, 3 seconds, and so forth of quiet in your mind. And if you can do that, if you can practice that kind of tranquility moment by moment by moment by moment, then gradually over the period of days, the tranquility becomes a little more and a little more the distractions become a little less, and a little less, and the distractions get shorter and the attention gets longer. This is gradually, day by day. So that's the first way to work with your mind in the midst of all that is going on right now. If you find that you're being overwhelmed by something, breathe. And I mean that, just breathe. You can, if you find that your thoughts are spinning out of control, take a moment and just breathe. Just be aware of your breath coming and going. If you need a little extra help, I was given a meditation exercise by a Tibetan doctor. This Tibetan doctor was visited Columbus, Ohio in the 1980s and gave us this amazing exercise that he developed to help calm the mind when panic is starting to set in. And it's the doctor's name was Dr. Akang Tarap. In other words, it was Akang Rinpoche. Akang Rinpoche said that when your mind is spiraling out of control, sometimes you need to get a hold of it by getting a hold of your breath. And so he taught to breathe in for a count of five, hold for a count of five, and breathe out for a count of five. And then breathe in again, hold, breathe out. And you can do this three times, you can do this five times, and this will allow your breath to become softer and also slow down your heart rate a little bit, and it'll also lower your blood pressure just a little bit. And this might help you, again, cut the continuity of the racing thoughts that are causing the panic. And after Dr. Tarap, Akang Rinpoche taught this little exercise, he taught a second exercise that I want to share. And that exercise, I nickname it the golden light exercise, but if you get his book, Taming the Tiger, if you get his book, you'll see it as an openness exercise. He said that what you do after you've done this breathing is to imagine a gate in front of you in space, and that you imagine that as you breathe out, your breath and your thoughts, feelings, and emotions go through the gate. It goes through the gate. And on the other side, all of those thoughts, feelings, and emotions turn into the golden light of universal. And it fills the room you're in, then it fills the house, then it fills the community, and so on. And in this way, the thoughts that are bothering us can be put to work as the golden light of universal compassion. So those are three things that you can do to work with your mind when things are beginning to spin out of control. Shamatha practice is a good baseline. It provides a baseline of being able to notice your thoughts and begin to let go of your thoughts in the moment. The breathing exercise helps you to anchor yourself in your body at that moment. And then after that, the openness exercise, the gate exercise, allows you to put all of those thoughts, feelings, and emotions to work by allowing them to go and turn into what their basic nature really is, which is the golden light of universal compassion. The Buddha taught that our thoughts, feelings, and emotions, he called them mental events. He didn't have a separate word for thoughts or feelings or emotions. He called them mental events. He said that the nature of all of these mental events is emptiness or limitlessness, which means they don't have a color, a shape, a location, or a beginning or an end, but they have appearance and they have luminosity and they have what some translators have translated as cognitive lucidity. So this way we open ourselves to the possibility that even our thoughts, fears, and concerns can be at their heart and root something wondrous and beautiful. So those are three exercises that you can do when things are difficult. So that's the first topic for today. The second topic for today is how can we see what's going on? How can we see this? Somebody asked me online yesterday, what's the Buddhist attitude toward this experience of illness? What's the Buddhist attitude toward this experience of epidemic and so forth? I think only an enlightened being can talk to us about this as to the whys of all of it. But I remember a great master being quoted at the time of a natural disaster that all of us have a group karma together. We're all human at this time in this place. And so there is some group karma for us here. But that some people will have the karma to be ill. Some people will have the karma to fear illness. Some people will have the karma to care for others. Some people will have the karma to do amazing things in the midst of all of this. And whatever our karma is, there's no way for us to know that. Only an enlightened being would truly know the causes and conditions that produced any one person's experience. So what we have to do instead of trying to solve an unsolvable question or answer an unanswerable question, because it's unanswerable for us, what we can do is we can work with our mind in the moment and try to produce as much virtue as we possibly can in the midst of this. Because if you remember that those first words of the Buddhist teaching, we are what we think, all that we are arises with our thoughts, and with our thoughts we make the world. The Buddha then said, if we think, speak, and act with an impure mind, suffering follows us, as certainly as the wheel follows the ox that draws the cart. And if we think, speak, and act with a pure mind, happiness follows us like a shadow that's unshakable. And so what's the dividing line between impure and pure? According to the teachings, the dividing line is selfishness. If we look at the Buddha's teaching on the Four Noble Truths, he said that that suffering is part of life. It has a cause, it has a solution, and there's a path. In that second noble truth, he said suffering is not something coming in from outside. It's something that arises from within us. It's clinging and fixation. As you know, we cling to all kinds of things, people, situations, ideas. And as Pema Chodron, the great Buddhist modern teacher, said, if something hurts so much, it's because I'm holding on so tight. So if we learn how to let go, then we'll actually have a way to work with what's going on within us. And we'll find a way to do more virtue and do less harm. And if we can be less selfish, that's going to be a start. So even in the midst of this illness, we are always thinking, me, myself, I. It's natural. We fear the illness. We fear getting sick. And we fear what will happen to our loved ones if they get sick. And so we have all of these concerns. And what we can try to do is try to be more kind and loving to ourselves and more kind and loving to those around us. Recognize that everybody's scared. Recognize that everybody is experiencing this in their own, through the lens of their own karma and fixations. They're all a little bit confused about this. And so if you can practice even just a little patience with yourself or a little patience with others, this is going to be the cause of great virtue for you. If we can practice virtue in this way, we can at least counteract our tendency to fixate on negative things. For example, if we start to think negatively and we practice one of those three things, breathe, shamatha, breathing, or the openness exercise, We will be doing something positive and putting our mind in a virtuous space. And that virtuous space will give us some peace of mind in the midst of all of this. So my hope is that one of the things you can do is make positive aspirations for yourself and positive aspirations for others while all of this is going on. I think those of you who have been following Lama Karma Drodul's Facebook, he has shared a prayer that is a positive aspiration. It's called the prayer that saved Sakya Monastery. And it was written a very long time ago by the Tibetan saint Tongtong Gyalpo, the king of the empty plain, as his name implies. And he was asked to write a prayer to help the people of Sakya Monastery who were undergoing great suffering because of a plague. And it was said that he spoke the prayer of taking refuge. He spoke the compassion mantra, Om Mani Padme Hum, or Om Mani Padme Hum. And after doing those two things, he spoke this prayer. And from that moment, through the power of truth of the wisdom of the Buddha, the plague was dispelled. Well, I don't know if our results will be the same, but because we're not Tongtong Gyalpo, let's face it, but what we can do is we can use this prayer in order to help us to put our mind in someplace positive. And so if you want to check out Lama Karma Drodul's, Lama Karma's mom's page on Facebook, he explains the prayer, and we're going to find a way to share the prayer with everyone. Folks who are on the KTD Monastery WeChat, I think he's just posted it today, but we'll try to post this on the columbusktc.org page sometime in the next day or so. So you can check us out there and you'll have a copy of this prayer. Of course, it's wonderful to get the reading transmission for these prayers, and I hope that the circumstances will allow us to do that soon. But even if we can't get it now, we can start to study it and read it every day as a way of putting positive aspirations in our mind during this time. One of the easiest prayers to recite for positive aspiration is the Four Immeasurables, which go like this: may all beings be happy and have the causes of happiness. May they be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May they have that great happiness, which is free from suffering. May they dwell in great equanimity, free of attachment and aversion to those near and far. And these prayers are very easy to find. The prayer of the Four Immeasurables is widely available online. And as you can see, they're sort of non-religious. They're something that can be said by people of any faith tradition. And when we wish for the happiness of beings and the causes of happiness, we're wishing for them to have virtuous mind, which is the cause of happiness. And when we're wishing for them to be free from suffering, we're wishing for them to be free from suffering and its causes, which is negative action. And so I'm hoping that by making these aspirations, we'll be able to put our mind on something that is positive, that will generate a virtuous mind for us, because it looks like some of us are going to be home for a while, or some of us are going to have extra free time on our hands. And so even though at first we're going to be spending a lot of time online and a lot of time on social media, like me, hopefully over the coming days, we will find more time to do our particular brand of spiritual practice, whether that's prayer or whether that is meditation and so forth. So my hope is that by sharing these things, which have come to me from the teachers that I've had over the years, that it will help all of you to be able to have this positive mind. Now, I think I'm just about done with my topics for today, and then I might be able to answer some questions that are being asked on Facebook. I'm sorry, I'm not equipped to answer them on YouTube right now, but I am equipped to answer questions that come on Facebook. And but before I do that, I want to let you know that we all have the capacity to gradually work with our minds and stabilize our minds, even in this situation. And there is one more practice I wanted to share before I went to questions. I knew there was one more. And that was not just making positive aspirations, but by actually praying to great masters. Everybody has a higher power. Let's face it, most of us recognize that we are not the highest power in the universe. And we have to recognize that there are those who are greater. And for some, it's God. For some, it's Christ. For some, it's the Buddha. And for some, it's their teacher, and so on. And I think it's very beneficial for us to pray and supplicate those who we have faith in. And I have to share this because it was one of the very first teachings that was ever shared with me by my teacher, Kenpo Carter Rinpoche. When I first met Kenpo Carter Rinpoche, I was kind of a mess. I was very anxious and very worried all the time. I had trouble sleeping. It was hard to be a nervous and anxious person. I still am nervous and anxious, but at least now I've got Dharma, and that helps me. And but at that time, I think Rinpoche could recognize that that I was afflicted and I had problems that I needed help with. And so he said, he taught me how to meditate, but then he added something. He said, and when your mind begins to feel unstable, he said, think of the Buddha and pray to the Buddha. And that really stuck with me. He must have known that I had grown up Catholic and that prayer was second nature for me as a person who had grown up Catholic. And so thinking that he, knowing that I had some faith in the power of prayer, he gave me a prayer practice to do. And so that's what I did. I practiced prayer. I thought of the Buddha, that shining golden figure made of golden light, and I imagined him to be in front of me. And I supplicated him and asked for his help. And in that way, I took refuge. I took refuge for the first time. Even before formally undergoing the Buddhist refuge ceremony, I took refuge with Kempo Rinpoche's help. And I did that by thinking of the Buddha and praying to the Buddha. If we think about what refuge means, all of the teachings that Kempo Carter Rinpoche has given about refuge, he said, we are human and in a world of suffering. The Buddha called this world of suffering samsara. And so we are helpless human beings in an ocean of suffering that the Buddha called samsara. So that's the first part. Second part, we feel that we need protection from the sufferings of samsara. And so we look to the Buddha as our source, primary source of refuge. The Buddha actually was able to surpass and go beyond samsara and its suffering and become liberated from samsara and its suffering. Therefore, he is the ultimate refuge. But the Buddha is not with us now. He has passed away, but he did leave behind his teachings, the Dharma, which is our second source of refuge. And so we can take refuge in the Buddha as the teacher and the Dharma as the path. But we may not know exactly how to practice the Dharma. Therefore, we need more help. So the third source of refuge is the Sangha, those who are our guides and our protectors on the path. And so what we are doing when we take refuge in the Buddha as the teacher, the Dharma as the path, and the Sangha as the community is we are taking refuge in those who can protect us from the suffering of samsara. Now, does this mean that the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha scoop us out of danger? It could mean that, but it could also mean that it lifts our mind up out of itself It lifts our mind up. Think about what you're thinking. When you turn your mind toward the Buddha, you're turning the mind toward the Buddha or your higher power because you're helpless in the face of the suffering that's happening. And just by turning your mind to the Buddha, that's what you're seeing. That's what you're experiencing. And this is true of Christian prayer and all types of prayer. Once you have turned your mind toward one's higher power, your mind is now in a different place. And what is being reflected on your mind is something virtuous and good. So as we would say in modern times, go with that and be with that. And so I'm hoping that this sense of being in the presence of the Buddha and receiving the blessings of the Buddha is with you. I remember something that Kempo Rinpoche said a few years after I had taken refuge. He said he had gathered a bunch of us together and he was going to give us a reading transmission. And I think he sensed that we were all a little freaked out about everything, about the transmission, about what was going to happen, about who we were, blah, blah, blah. And so he actually just had us sit down and breathe quietly for a few minutes. And after we meditated quietly for a few minutes, he said, imagine that the Buddha, Shakyamuni, made of brilliant golden light, is in front of you and slightly above you and facing you in space. And we imagined the Buddha like that. And he said, place your hands together and with your own thoughts, supplicate the Buddha and ask for whatever is bothering you to be worked with. And so we did that. And then he said, imagine that golden light is coming to you from the Buddha. Imagine that golden light is coming to you and washing away all that is complex for you. It's washing away all of your trouble and difficulty, and it's giving you everything you need. It's giving you everything that you need. And then the Buddha dissolves into light and merges with you and blesses you, and then rest your mind in that. And all of us sitting in this little group of people about to receive a reading transmission, we did all of these things. And the feeling in the room was powerful and profound and quiet. And so by sharing this last little practice, the practice of prayer and receiving blessing, if you can do this, this will also help you in times of difficulty. Now, I've been going on and on. I looked at my watch and it's been like 40 minutes. So maybe this is enough for today, but I'm not really equipped to kind of watch the streams and pick up your questions, but I'll be here for a moment or two and see if there is if there's any question that you have, if you can sit and meditate a little bit at the end. Here's a question. A friend is panicking over this. She keeps, fear texting me. Responded patiently and lovingly and told her I'd pray for her, but I finally had to set a boundary. Am I doing something wrong by not listening to her? I understand this. I completely understand this. It is really hard to for everyone right now. And what I've noticed is that people, any person who has a history of any kind of trauma happening to them in their past, all of that trauma is going to get brought up in the midst of this situation. It's like they're going to be re-experiencing it over and over again. And so one of the things you can do in this situation is to recognize that they are acting out of their fear. And you're right, your friend is fear texting you and wants you to be present with them. And you are concerned about what will happen if you stop answering them. I understand this. And one of the things that that you can do is to recognize that you at this point are not an enlightened being, and therefore you have limits. And so there are limits to your compassion. And this comes from Kempo Carter Rinpoche, who was once asked by someone, how do I handle a relative of mine who I know is continuously asking me for money, but they're using it for drinking and drugs? what should I do? Should I stop helping them? And if I stop helping them, am I bad? And Rinpoche's answer was, he said, everybody has a limit to their compassion because they're not enlightened. When you begin to feel resentment toward the people you're trying to help, you have actually gone a little past your limit and you actually need to back up. You actually need to back up a few steps and stop helping. And what he said that the person could say to her relative is, he can say, I have done what I can for you and I cannot help you any further. Now, you might not want to do this with your friend who is fear texting you, but what you might say is, I want you to understand how much I care for you. And I would, you might do it on the phone. You might do it by text, whatever you feel is better, or write them a letter and say, I want you to understand that I'm going to answer you once a day. I need for you to understand that you need as many sources of support as you can. I am doing the best I can to support you and I will pray for you, but here are some things you can do for yourself. And that way you're not leaving them completely without resources, but you're also protecting yourself from that resentment, which can be poisonous for you. So that's something to kind of keep in mind, to take good care of yourself and so forth and so on. And so my hope is that by letting us know that we all have limits and that it's okay to back up, that we'll know that we are not doing something bad. And something else you can do for your friend is you can do that exercise, seeing the Buddha over their head and giving golden light to your friend and seeing the Buddha dissolve into your friend. And that's the best you can do for her right now. If she's fear texting you, you can bless her and say, I will respond to you once a day, or I will respond to you every other day or whatever. And here are some resources that you can seek out. They may be angry with you, but the fact of the matter is they have not yet confronted their own situation and not been able to pull together the resources that they need to take care of themselves. But if you can help them connect to resources that will help them, that's the best we can do sometimes. Now, I noticed that someone else asked if there were specific things we can do. Yes, His Holiness the 17th Karmapa did recommend the prayer that saved Sakya Monastery. He did recommend that because it was spoken by an enlightened being and because it had powerful impact. He did recommend that. But I remember in the past, Kempo Rinpoche being asked about what's the best practice to do for this and that. And he used to say, well, we're limited unenlightened beings right now. So we think we need Medicine Buddha for healing and Tara for removing obstacles and Chenrezig for compassion and so forth. But he said, if we practice one mantra, dedicate it to whatever is going on for us, he said, that will be sufficient because all of the deities are the same in essence, in the realm of the Dharmakaya or the enlightened mind itself. They're all equal. They're all the same. So if you would, if you feel close to Tara, do Tara mantra and dedicate it to all sentient beings for this. If you do Chenrezig, then do that. If you're doing your Mahamudra preliminaries or your Nundra practice, do that and dedicate it. I remember Kempo Rinpoche once said, he said, we can aim whatever practice we are doing, aim it directly at whatever is troubling us. This is a powerful thing. We can aim it right at what is troubling us and say, I dedicate it. And the way he said that you could dedicate was he said, dedicate your merit to all sentient beings in general, but specifically for this purpose or that purpose. And it can be you. You can actually dedicate it to yourself, but then you can also dedicate it to everybody who's feeling like you. So it doesn't have to be only about you. So that's a practice that lots of people can do. And if you want to take this opportunity, if you're like me and you're at home, to actually increase your practice a little bit, don't try to increase it so much because that can be motivated by ego, like, oh, I'm going to be a great practitioner during this time and so forth and so on. Anything that's kind of, what's the word, that's caught up with ego take you in the wrong direction. So in any case, if you can dedicate some of your practice to yourself and working through this and so forth and so on, you can do that. Next time we get together, I'm going to be talking a little bit about the Medicine Buddha practice. And I'm going to be talking, the next time we chat, I will be talking about the prayer that saved Sakya Monastery. I have not myself received the reading transmission on this, so it's a little dicey for me to be trying to explain it. But what I'll do is I'll help you work through the words, because the words can sometimes be confusing, and I can point you toward resources. And I've seen, even on my Facebook feed here, while it's been going by, I've seen some links that have been put in there to the prayer, and links that have been put in there to teachings about the prayer. So you'll probably get some high quality teachings on this. On just by checking out the Facebook feed. Somebody asked me if this is going to be made available for later watching. I have no clue, because I don't know how YouTube works and I don't know how Facebook Live works. So my hope is that these will be available. That's why I'm using both platforms, so that I can be sure I have a copy for myself and that I might have something that could be shared later. So let's see if there's any more questions. Thanks to everybody, by the way, for watching. I've been hi, everybody. What can I say? This is unusual. Let's see. No questions. Okay. So then maybe the thing to do is to know when it's time to quit and to remember that we're all in this together. And we might be the one person in our home, the one person in our neighborhood who is breathing and who is trying to practice. And so, I see somebody's asking about my door mantra. It's a form of the Chenrezig mantra. I don't know which form. It is one of the ones that's used as a door blessing. And it's also the mantra that is printed on all of, this is odd, but it's the one that if you've been to the Carme Ling Columbarium in Delhi, New York, it's the little Chenrezig mantra prayer that is printed on each of the urns for the ashes of the deceased ones. So in any case, it's a Chenrezig compassion mantra. I mean, whether it's Om Mani Padme Hung or another form of that, it's a blessing to be seen. So, so I think that this is where we'll stop for today. And we'll make the aspiration through this discussion of the teachings that we've all received from our teachers over the years, through sharing suffering and come to happiness. And may they go to Buddhahood. And once they get to Buddhahood, may they then emanate in all directions and benefit sentient beings endlessly. We meditate quietly for a moment with this thought in mind. Okay, everyone. Thank you so much. And we all pray for the long life of all of the great masters, His Holiness the Dalai Lama, His Holiness Karmapa, all of the great masters. And may all beings everywhere be free from suffering. So thank you. I'm going to see if I can safely end the YouTube stream. So Om Mani Padme Hum. And then we're going to also try to finish the Facebook Live feed. Om Mani Padme Hum.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.